presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Coming up in a couple of minutes, I'm going to explain why I think the definition of rivalries when it comes to college football might be changing just slightly. And I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing or just kind of, as they say, a thing. But I do believe we may be seeing an evolution unfolding here. And I'll get to that, my reasons why on that, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before that, it's great to have you on Dog Nation Daily. I want to begin with something that Kirby Smart said last Saturday. He was asked, hey, we had 93K Day in 2016, huge crowd at G-Day a year ago, and is there excitement building the same way for this year's spring game that's going to be played on April the 20th? Kirby Smart was asked that question. Here's what he had to say about that. Here's Kirby.
I think the University of Georgia fans love this game, and I certainly don't expect anything less. I mean, I'm not sitting here proclaiming that everybody has to come to the game. I think we've got a really good football team coming back. I think we got an exciting team. I think that is an opportunity to showcase the talents of 14 new freshmen that just got here that people want to come watch and see. It certainly has impacted our recruiting. We're going to have some of the best players in the country coming by to G-Day because they want to see what the atmosphere is like in Athens. And, I just think that's the nature of the beast when you're at University of Georgia, that fans want to come watch it. So it's a free chance to watch a game for a lot of people that have never seen a game here.
So real quick, first point to make, a minor one off what Kirby Smart said there. I don't think that Kirby Smart's going to ask for 93K unless he knows he's going to get it. And I think this year, I guess there's a little bit of a thought, and I didn't realize this was going to be a thing, but come to find out maybe it is, that because G-Day's a holiday weekend, Sunday is Easter, Saturday, April 20th is the day before Easter, I guess for some people there's either travel involved with that or Easter egg hunts for the families that have small kids. And so maybe this year's G-Day attendance is not going to be like what it was maybe a year ago or what it was in 2016. Maybe this is going to be probably still bigger than it was 5 or 10 years prior, but maybe not quite as big as some of the other G-Days that Kirby Smart's been a part of. I'm just guessing on this, and I'm guessing from a strategic standpoint, Kirby does want to make a big push for spring game attendance unless he knows he's going to get what he wants. The optics of that might just not be exactly what he wants them to be, which is probably somewhat understandable. But it's something else that Smart says there that I think is actually more important for our discussion here today. He says some of the best players in the country are going to be here on April 20th. There's no doubt about that. The list is growing seemingly with each and every day. Big time five-star names seemingly added all the time for what's going to go down on April the 20th. And what Kirby said is that these guys are looking to see the atmosphere that Georgia fans can put together, not just on fall Saturdays, but G-Day Saturdays too. On that point, I think he's exactly right. I think the pageantry of G-Day is a big seller for a lot of recruits. It's the kind of thing that I think could waver a young man who may be considering Georgia or another school, seeing how big Georgia does it for its spring games, I think is a really big part of that. But that is not to say that every recruit that comes in for G-Day is solely interested in the fun part of it and the fan part of it and the pageantry, the bells and whistles, the sizzle that goes on around the game. That's not to say that's the only thing people care about. I think we have some evidence based on what Jeff Sintel has kind of reported for us that at least one recruit, I'm talking about a big timer, he may be looking at more the nuts and bolts stuff here. He may be looking in on G-Day to see some of the football stuff, some of the stuff between the white lines as a way to determine how he feels about the University of Georgia right now. The reason why I say that is, many of you know, I was in Augusta yesterday. I was not on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, the show that I'm lucky enough to get to do with Jeff Sintel each and every Wednesday afternoon. We talk UGA recruiting. But Jeff by himself yesterday did yeoman's work, just a bang-up job of covering the current landscape of recruiting. And there was a big topic of conversation about five-star tight end Rick Gilbert. Now, Gilbert is a guy that we've obviously talked about a lot. We've paid very close attention to him. And going back a couple of weeks ago, when Gilbert was talking about his relationship with Georgia, one of the things he got into was the things that new tight ends coach Todd Hartley's been saying to him. What's he been asking? What do they want to know about? And Gilbert, who wants to play tight end at the college level, although he could probably play a lot of positions, he wants to play tight end. It's probably not a surprise to hear from Gilbert that when he talks to Todd Hartley, they're talking about how tight ends are going to be used. Here is Gilbert from a clip you've heard before.
Coach Hartley, he really likes me, and I really like him. Obviously, his history, he brings that up a lot with David Njoku, his guys in Miami. So, yeah, that's basically what we talk about. We talk a lot now. I went down there for a visit, and we got to talk, so that was good. Just talked about how he was trying to change Georgia's offense around with the tight ends, or not change it around, but just add tight ends into it.
So that's, I think, interesting stuff from Rick Gilbert right there, saying when I talk to Todd Hartley, one of the things that we're talking about is how he plans on using these tight ends more. And it's kind of funny. We go to practice. It seems like every single time one of the drills that George is doing in the brief window of time the media gets to watch practice is quarterbacks throwing two tight ends, just a basic drill where the tight ends run the routes and the quarterbacks, all of them throw two of those tight ends. And it's really fun to watch Hartley in the midst of all this. He's always coaching up his guys. He's always very energetic. Of all the coaches on the current coaching roster for Georgia, he's one of the more easily noticeable coaches during practice because of how energized he gets about the way he wants them to run routes and, you know, hauling in even tough to make catches. He's very big on that seemingly already during practice. And apparently when Hartley's talking to Gilbert, he's saying, when you come play for me at Georgia, if you do, but when you do come play for me at Georgia, you better expect me to get those tight ends heavily involved in that offense. That is what Todd Hartley's apparently told Rick Gilbert. But yesterday on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, Jeff Sintel made a really good point. He said, but for Gilbert, who wants to make his college decision, you know, sometime this summer, kind of before his senior year begins, well, how are you going to know? How are you going to know that Georgia really is committed to getting your position more involved in the offense? It's obviously been a hot topic about how tight ends have and have not been used in recent Georgia offenses, the ones led by Jim Chaney. Gilbert seems to think in 2019 there's a chance that may change, but Jeff brings up a good point. How will we know, and this is where the spring game kind of comes back into the conversation again. Here is Jeff Sintel as a part of yesterday's Before the Hedges.
So one particular question I thought was very interesting is, I asked him a lot, I said, Eric, how are you going to know that the Georgia offense is now an improved or an augmented tight end friendly offense when you're planning to commit during the summer, hopefully before your senior season, when you haven't really seen the product on the field from Georgia yet? Very interesting question. He hopes to maybe see some of that in practice, see some of that in meeting rooms, see some of that on G-Day. But also, if he doesn't know exactly what a clear picture of what the tight end room looks like for Georgia, might wait a couple of weeks into the season to see that on the field and see that ball maybe going into John Fitzpatrick's hands and Eli Wolf's hands and, of course, Charlie Warner's hands during the course of the 2019 campaign.
So I think that's really interesting. Now, it sounds like the unspoken part of what Jeff just brought up there is another way that a Rick Gilbert could eventually make his decision is by simply trusting the things that Todd Hartley's been saying him. Hartley, the tight ends coach, who's kind of taking a lead role in the Gilbert recruitment, that he might just be so convincing with his belief that tight ends are going to be a big part of what's going on at Georgia that Gilbert might not need to see some games later on this fall to really truly know that. If he's unconvinced, maybe he'll postpone that, but it sounds like Georgia's going to be heavily in the mix for all of this one way or another. However, though, for those of us who look forward to G-Day anyway, maybe this is another reason for that. As Kirby Smart said off the top of our program here today, when the stands are full and the fans are having a good time and they do such a good job of making G-Day feel like any other college game and, frankly, a much bigger environment and atmosphere than most programs outside the SEC can even dream of having, that's going to impact some recruits, and with good reason. However, for guys like Rick Gilbert, they may be more influenced by the stuff actually happening between the white lines. So if you see Charlie Warner getting a lot of catches on G-Day, if you see John Fitzpatrick involved, if you see, you know, some of the other guys who are working, you know, there, maybe Walter Grant at some point lines up a tight end. Maybe he catches a ball, given the fact that he's worked on offense thus far this spring. But those guys who are at that position working out and doing that kind of stuff right now, if you see them get involved and get a lot of catches, just know this. That may have an influence on Rick Gilbert. And Gilbert's thoughts and Gilbert's conversation with Jeff Sintel is just one of the ways in which I think a lot of Georgia fans are starting to get geared up for two Saturdays from now. G-Day, for more reasons than one, is going to be a lot of fun. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us live on video, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on video a lot of different ways. We're also on the radio at noon with our friends at Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we are available as a podcast wherever you find them. Apple Podcast Player, the Android devices, we got you covered there. The world famous DogNation.com. We just try to make Dog Nation Daily easy for you to find. We're glad you found us today and hope you can find us on Wednesday too. We are really looking forward to being a part of a terrific event coming up this Wednesday. back again at the Marlows in Dunwoody. It's the Dunwoody Village Parkway location starting at 6 p.m. We'll be there from 6 to 8 p.m. this Wednesday, April 17th. Cannot wait for that. Not just me, but our buddy John Stinchcomb's also going to be there as well. So it is going to be an unbelievable time, a big-time event taking place 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, April 17th. Marlows in Dunwoody at 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway. How about this to make the night even more fun? Our friends at Marlows also have a great cocktail they've made just in honor of this big event. It's with 229 vodka, raspberry syrup, lemon juice, ginger beer. It's garnished with blackberry. And that's one of the things that Marlows does. They take those, you know, craft cocktails, they put special care in all the ingredients. That's going to be there for you this upcoming Wednesday, too. So it's a great spring game preview, looking ahead to the action in Athens on Saturday with me, John Stinchcomb, hopefully you, the Marlows in Dunwoody, starting at 6 p.m. this Wednesday. Cannot wait to have you there with us for that. It's 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway. All right, coming up in just a couple of minutes here on our program, we're also going to get former Georgia quarterback David Green. David will tell you about some exciting stuff happening on G-Day in and around Athens, including with our friends over at Tailgate Apparel right there in downtown Athens. Before any of that, let me go around the doghouse here today, brought to you by Online Trading Academy. And I said off the top of the program that I think the definition of the word rivalry in college football might be changing just slightly. Now, I'm a traditionalist. I like traditional uniforms. I like, you know, all the great artifacts of college football that we've paid close attention to for decades and in some cases more than a century. I like the old stuff associated with college football. Sometimes that means the old ways. I'm a little bit resistant to change. But one of the things you can't help but notice is that traditional rivalries in college football don't seem to matter as much anymore compared to what seems to matter more now, which is the definition of a rivalry would seem to be whoever is standing in your way in the moment, whoever is keeping you from getting what you want. And the reason why I bring that up is, you know, I was in Augusta yesterday for the practice round and the par three for the Masters, and you can't take your phone on the course. So when you get off and when you get, you know, back to your car, you're scrolling through your phone to see everything you missed over the course of the day while you're gone. And you see this news that to the average person may seem like no big deal whatsoever. I know you read this at DogNation.com. Our buddy Michael Carvel kind of wrote this up a bit. But it looks like Georgia, who had a non-conference game scheduled with the Sycamores of Indiana State, no word if Larry Bird was planning on being in attendance in Athens, but nonetheless, it won't matter now because the 2023 game with Indiana State for Georgia is now not going to be played. And as I said, at first blush, first glance, that may seem like it doesn't matter whatsoever, not a big deal at all. But the rumor mill, including our forum at forum.dognation.com, starts spinning of, ooh, well, now Georgia's got a non-conference date open for 2023. And as much as we've talked about some of these future scheduled series way out in the future, 2023 doesn't really sound all that long and all that far from now. You know, who is it that's going to occupy that date? Who is it that's going to fill that date? And I think Mike Griffith would say it could be a number of teams potentially in there, but that's not going to stop the online scuttlebutt about the possibility that it's a program like Oklahoma. And in fact, Zach Barnett from footballscoop.com had recently tweeted out, when you look at Oklahoma's future home-and-home series scheduled, he gives you Tennessee and Nebraska. It's ironic to think that Nebraska is now a non-conference. He mentions Michigan, LSU, Alabama, Clemson, but he also mentions an unconfirmed series for that 2023 date for Georgia, with a return date, I guess, back to Athens in the year 2031. So all of a sudden, you know, this starts to feel like more of like a modern day rivalry than some of the old school stuff associated with college football, because Georgia saw Oklahoma get into the college football playoff a year ago while Georgia had to sit home. And apparently the thinking around Georgia might be, if this series indeed takes place, well, if they're going to make the playoff over us, we better play them on the field so we can knock them out of the playoff in the future, which frankly I don't think is all that bad of an idea. And in 2023, there's a very good chance that Georgia and Oklahoma are still very much fighting it out to be in the top four or as some of the best teams in college football. So I think this is, you know, really kind of interesting right now. Now, to add to all of this, I mentioned Mike Griffith before. He's also written a little bit more about some of these traditional rivalries a bit lately. You know, he put a poll up the other day on Twitter, got a couple thousand responses. That's not a small number of people weighing in on something like this. And according to what Mike Griffith's poll of UGA fans and Dog Nation consumers let you know, that apparently 62% of the Georgia fans that weighed into Mike would trade a yearly series with Clemson for the yearly series that Georgia currently has with Georgia Tech. Now, I've said this before on this show many times. Given the current landscape of college football, that's a trade I would make, although I do know that's controversial for many of you. You like the tradition of the clean old-fashioned hate rivalry, but there's at least a few thousand Georgia fans that maybe don't necessarily feel that way. That's not as much of a surprise to me as what Mike also retweeted yesterday, and I was kind of looking at this from the parking lot there in Augusta, that apparently some Clemson fans kind of feel the same way. There's a big sports radio show up there called Sports Talk South Carolina. One of their guys also did a similar poll of, okay, so if the Georgia people say they'd trade Tech for Clemson, would Clemson people trade South Carolina for Georgia? That's their big non-conference in-state rival. And to me, this is actually pretty surprising. That according to this poll, 53% say we'd keep the Palmetto Bowl, but 47% of the people in South Carolina say they'd stop playing South Carolina and play Georgia every year. So all of a sudden, you know, Georgia-Clemson to some people going to feel like more of a rivalry than the traditional Georgia versus Georgia Tech or South Carolina versus Clemson, because they're rivaling and competing against each other for recruits and college football playoff position. So I don't know what you do with all of this, but pretty clearly there is an eagerness on the part of many fans for better non-conference scheduling. And for me, it's really fun to see Georgia leading the way on all that. It's Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. It's brought to you by Online Trading Academy. You know, it's the best decision you can make to invest in yourself. That means learning how to make money in the markets. Online Trading Academy gives you a chance to do just that across a variety of trading styles and an entire spectrum of asset classes, both in the classroom and online. Please make that decision. Make your money work for you by going to tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. That's trading with a D, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta, our friends at Online Trading Academy. All right, good stuff coming up later on. We'll take a closer look at what's going on with UGA spring practice. For now, though, let's get ready to welcome in our good friend David Green here to Dog Nation Daily. And it is great to have David back on the program. David Green, the longtime former Georgia quarterback, a guy who's still a great voice in looking at what's currently going on with the estate of UGA. I know he's a guy getting ready for G-Day coming up. By the way, I'll also tell you about a place you're going to want to be come G-Day, because I know there's going to be a lot of fun stuff going on at Tailgate Apparel right there in downtown Athens. We'll do that before we're done today as a part of our conversation here on Dog Nation Daily. But David, let me say welcome back to you. Thanks for spending some time with us, and I hope that you're doing well today.
Brandon, doing great, buddy. How about the weather, man? Isn't it gorgeous today?
Boy, I tell you what, you can't ask for anything better than that. It is so nice and so much fun. You know, when the Masters shows up and the sunshine kind of pops out, it really makes you feel like spring is here, right?
I tell you, I love it. I got my green shirt on today, man. I'm in full Masters gear at this moment. I'm excited about this tournament. I love it every year.
Well, I do too, and it kind of leads into G-Day, which many of us also love, the following Saturday, and I know that's really fun for you. And I guess, David, as a guy that played in that spring scrimmage, and I know it's different than a fall Saturday because you're lining up against another opponent on those days as opposed to your own teammates, but you know, there are a lot of us, this is as close to real football as we get this time of year. There are a lot of us that cherish that chance to be between the hedges on a day like that. When you look back on your time as a player, what do you remember about G-Day and what made it fun? Or was it, I guess it's probably fair to ask, was it just one of those things you're just kind of glad to have spring practice over the time you got there?
You hit the nail on the head right there. The thing I remember about G-Day is it, spring ball was over, and we actually had about a month break before – yeah, we really got back to work in June. Now, of course, we were there in May and working out some, but it was a lot lighter load. You know, the spring game's always a lot of fun. Look, you've been practicing for a few weeks. You got a new team, new faces, and a new identity. And so, you know, it's always tough with G-Day because it's very vanilla football since the games are televised. They don't show a whole lot of stuff. It's pretty basic football. But for us fans, we love it because we want to see the new recruits. We want to see the new team. We want to see the new faces. And we want to see just football again. And we want to be in a stadium. So, look, it's always a fun time. There's a lot of excitement around a game. I mean, you know, anytime you get a chance to go in a stadium and play football, it's always a lot of fun.
Now, I know that later on, Mark Richt instituted the thing where, like, the winning team got steak and the losing team got the beanie weenies. That wasn't your era, though, right? Did y'all do anything like that?
We did that, yeah.
Okay, y'all did do that. Okay. So how much competitive fire gets going with the two teams about the two meals then at that point?
You know, it does. I mean, it definitely gets competitive. I mean, it's – it's one of those deals. I mean, it's probably not quite as is what some people think, because, you know, you're playing against your own buddies and the whole deal. And when you're competing, you want to win and the whole deal. But, you know, could people not sleep the night before because they were fretting over whether they were getting beanie weenies or steak? That wasn't the case. But I know the fans, look, they want to see a good competitive outing. You want to see the new faces and the new team, and you want to see how the team's going to come together and sing together. So I think, if anything, it just gives the fans, you know, kind of a little glimpse into what this team's going to look like. But I will say this, you don't want to look too much into the spring game, because the best team that I was on in 2002, we had the worst spring game. I think I was probably like 4 of 11. We didn't score any points, and it was just a really bad outing, and that ended up being, you know, the best team I was on my whole career there.
Yeah, it's a really good point to remember on that. The other day, Kirby Smart talked a little bit about Jake Fromm, and I think he kind of half-kiddingly said that, to a certain extent, he worries about Fromm not getting bored during practice right now. He's going into his third year as the starter. He knows this offense backwards and forwards, even with the changeover to offensive coordinator James Coley. This is still going to be, you get the strong indication, you know, very much the same kind of offense that that Fromm has been used to running. And I guess, to a certain extent, you were in a similar position in that, you know, by the time your career was done at Georgia, you'd been the four-year starter and had been a redshirt the year before that, albeit with a different coaching staff. I mean, by the time you got to the end, how did you stay engaged during practice, especially during the spring, knowing that you knew really the offense backwards and forwards by then? How did you stay engaged, and what did you choose to focus your mind on?
Well, I think, you know, as a quarterback, you've got a list of things going into the season that you know you want to work on and get better at. The idea of, yeah, I know the playbook, that's one thing, and you expect to execute at a high level, but there's always things that you're wanting to work on to get better. And so whatever those, you know, two or three or four items are for Jake, hopefully those are the things that he's concentrating on, because it is a challenge when you go back in the classroom. Because the funny thing about a lot of, you know, coaches is when they start the new season, they start from scratch. And it's, guys, here's the playbook, here's the two-hole, here's the four-hole. And you're going, oh, my gosh, we do the same thing every year. And they want to start from the beginning. But as a player, you just got to go through it, and that's just part of the process, going through it. But mentally, you know, you got to figure out, what is it? How am I going to take the next step as a player to get better, and then use the spring to really have time to start working, you know, honing and working on that craft.
You know, when you came into Georgia, you didn't really have, I mean, you know, Corey Phillips played some football, but there wasn't like a long-time entrenched starter that you had a chance to learn from. At least that's my memory. Maybe you'll correct me and say that, no, there was somebody there like that. But my memory is that when you were at Georgia, you know, you were kind of there to almost learn on your own. It seems like Dwan Mathis and Stetson Bennett, though, the two guys kind of fighting to be that backup behind Fromm, it seems like they have a very different scenario going on right now. It seems like they have the real luxury of getting a chance to learn from him. And to their credit, both Mathis and Bennett have said, yeah, we are trying to gain everything we can from Jake. We're trying to pick up on the things that he does. How much of a luxury is that for them from your perspective?
Well, it is nice. And, you know, it's funny, in college, my situation was a little different because Quincy Carter was a starter, you know, the year I redshirted. And then he got hurt, you know, midway through the season. And so Corey finished out. And when Coach Rick came the following year, Quincy went pro, and it was really Corey and I, you know, kind of battling for that spot. I actually probably could relate to it a little bit more in the pros because, you know, I was, you know, in New England and Seattle. I had Hasselbeck and Brady and Manning that I was watching. And it is amazing how much you can watch and sit and learn from other guys in the way that they prepare, the way that they do things. But the one thing I would say as a quarterback you got to be careful of is everybody's style is a little different. And you got to be careful that you don't try to just totally emulate everything that they're doing, because it could take away from what makes you unique.
Yeah, I think it's really well said. I want to talk about tailgate apparel in Athens in just a moment, because I know on G-Day that's going to be a lot of fun to be there, especially for folks looking to stock up on some of the spring apparel there. Let me squeeze in one more thing before we get there. David, a lot of times we talk to you on this show as the former player, because obviously you've got great insight having been on the field as a UGA player, but in this stage of your life, you're also a fan too. And as a fan, How much fun is it for you to look at some of the non-conference scheduling that Georgia has recently added, whether it be, you know, a couple series coming up against Clemson, you know, Texas in a few years, Florida State was just added. You know, these are major non-conference series, and in some cases, Georgia's going to play two of them in the same year, while also apparently keeping Georgia Tech on the schedule, too. It's a real effort towards beefing up scheduling, and as Kirby Smart has said, giving fans the kinds of games that they want. You're obviously both a Georgia fan and a college football fan. How much do you love this for the sport, that Georgia's leading the way on really kind of playing the kinds of games that fans have demanded to see?
Well, I'll say this. I kind of got mixed emotions. My first instinct is, of course, I love it because I want to see good football games being played. You know, anytime you can go and play, you know, the Texas and the Clemsons and the Notre Dames, I mean, those are the games that you want to see. Now, the only reason I say there's mixed emotions is you take last year's situation at the SEC Championship. We lose to Alabama, you know, arguably the best team in the country at the time. Of course, Clemson came in and beat them in the national championship. But, you know, we play them in the SEC championship, lose, get two losses, having lost to LSU, and they say strength of schedule matters. But, look, let's face it. When it comes down to a two-loss team and a one-loss team, who gets kicked out? Well, we saw it happen last year. So, as a fan, I love it because I love to see our teams on the big stage. And, look, as long as you win, it's great. But if you slip up and get beat, people are always going to use that argument against you from keeping you in, you know, the playoffs at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's really a really good point. There's going to have to be a perspective change by the rest of the country. If teams like Georgia are going to play tougher schedules, you're just going to see more losses, and therefore how we define who the best team really is, I think it's going to have to change, David. I think that's a really good point. I mentioned that G-Day comes up on April 20th, and, you know, we talked off the top of the program about how the weather's so much nicer now, and, you know, for a lot of folks, that means kind of getting into that T-shirt season and kind of pulling out some of those T-shirts like you get from Tailgate Apparel. David, the thing I love about the Tailgate Apparel T-shirts is they're incredibly soft, or they're comfortable. I also kind of like the retro look of a lot of those. I'm going to make sure when I post the show today at DogNation.com that I put a link into some of the new stuff that a Tailgate has for this spring. But I know you hang out there a lot on game days. I know that you kind of know how much fun that is. And on G-Day, I'm guessing they're going to be having a great time for the folks who want to do a little shopping before the game kicks off later that afternoon. Is that fair to say?
No, it's totally fair. It's going to be a great day at Tailgate. We've got a number of guys lined up. You know, to kick things off, we've got Devon Gales, you know, who's kind of really just been embraced by the Bulldog community. He's going to be there from 12 to 1 on G-Day, which would be great. You know, he just had a surgery, and he can't make it to G-Day. And so we wanted him at least to come to Tailgate so the Georgia fans can come out and just kind of show their support. He couldn't sit out in the heat, so we wanted to make sure he got an environment that was as close to the G-Day as it can get. My old receiver, Freddie Gibson, is going to be out there doing a signing too, so I think Fred's probably going to be there from around 11 to 12, 11 to 1. So Freddie G is going to be out there. And I think even maybe Musa Smith, too.
Really?
We thought we were going to do two.
Wow.
Musa loves the store. He came out and did a signing one time last year. Loved the store, loved the apparel, and mentioned wanting to come back as well. So we could potentially, you know, have Devon, Fred, and Musa there, you know, leading up to G-Day. So, I mean, it's going to be a really fun day in Athens to begin with, but having those guys at Tailgate is going to be a lot of fun.
So let me give folks the address. It's 279 East Broad Street, downtown Athens. That's the old Harry Bissett's building right there. It's very convenient in downtown Athens. And, you know, David, I'm a family. I got young kids. You know, you go to Athens on a game day, you're kind of looking to do some stuff before you go inside the stadium. You got to keep the kids occupied. And so I really appreciate y'all doing this kind of stuff at Tailgate Apparel, because for folks like me who have families, you know, getting a chance to meet some of those former Georgia players, Devon Gales, to hear more about his story, and it's so cool to now see him even more entrenched in the community now that he's going to be coaching nearby. I just think that's a really cool thing for folks who are looking for something to do on game days. Tailgate's been doing this for a while, so I just think it's really, really cool to have that as a part of the game day atmosphere on G-Day as well.
Well, absolutely. And look, if they're looking for, you know, a good time, get to meet former players. And look, Fred Gibson's loaded with personality. He's great with people. Same thing with Musa. Some of the folks met Musa last year. But these are guys that love Georgia. They love their time in Athens. And If you're a dog fan and you want to, you know, get close to some guys that play, they'll, you know, then get the pictures made. They'll have their families there as well. So it'll be a great time. And I know Devon, you know, he bleeds red and black now. He's kind of been adopted by the Georgia family. So it's going to be a really, really fun day.
David, we really appreciate your time today. It's so much fun to catch up with you and talk a little Georgia football. Appreciate your perspective on things. Hope I'll bump into you on April 20th maybe as well. And we will look forward to seeing you soon. And certainly appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily.
Thank you, Brandon. Appreciate you.
Good stuff there from David Green as part of our program. And how about that lineup on G-Day at tailgate, a pair with Davin Gales, with Fred Gibson. Looks like Moosa Smith's going to be hanging out there as well. When it comes to a big look back on some of those 2002 SEC champion dogs, really speaking my language, that was a great offense there in 2002. And Moosa Smith and Fred Gibson being a big part of that. Of course, David Green there as well. And it'll be fun to see Moosa and Fred as a part of tailgate apparel coming up on G-Day. And that's also interesting from David to say, hey, y'all be careful not to make too much out of G-Day now. That, that you know, if the offense isn't exactly crisp, isn't exactly clicking, apparently back in 2002 it wasn't really clicking for his dogs either. And yet they go out and lead the SEC in scoring that year and win the SEC championship. I think that's a really important thing to bring into this discussion. And I think something else that David said there is really important. You know, I mentioned before that we could be in the midst of seeing, you know, kind of rivalries evolve in college football. All of a sudden, it may be more important to play the teams you're competing with for playoff positioning than it is to play the teams that you've traditionally called your rivals. I don't know how much that's going to change. There's at least a little bit of an evolution of the thought process among some of the administrators and the fans around college football right now. But David, I think, brings up a really practical point to all of this. That something else that's going to have to change, if Georgia's going to play Texas and Clemson in the month of September and then roll through an 8 or 9 game SEC schedule, then this idea that the best teams in the country are the ones that have 0 or 1 losses, that's going to change too. You can't say we're going to change our scheduling and start playing a whole bunch of really good teams and then expect the records for the teams that do that to be pristine, 12-0, 11-1. We already see this in the NFL. Kirby made the comparison between college and NFL scheduling not too long ago. In the NFL, I mean, how frequently do we see the Super Bowl champion have multiple losses? I can think of, what, 2 Giants teams that have won the Super Bowl with like 9-7 regular season records. No one doubted it was the best team at the end because they proved themselves over the course of the rigorous NFL playoffs. And then college football, the similar thought process has got to occur. I think that's a really important point from David Green. I hope you'll check out David's friends over Tailgate Apparel coming up, and really anytime you're in Athens, but especially a couple Saturdays from now on G-Day on April 20th. Good stuff from him, and it's great to have you here on Dog Nation Daily.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, I started the show today by talking a little bit about something that Jeff Sintel said yesterday on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. You know, I had a chance to go back and rewatch that show because normally I'm on it, and I wasn't able to be a part of that yesterday, so I wanted to see what Jeff had to say with me gone. And I brought up one really good point he made off the top of the program. There's something else that Jeff had to say yesterday, and it's a follow-up. Something that Kirby Smart's been talking about. It's a little bit different twist on it than I initially had. Kirby's concerns about defensive line right now, Georgia fans' concerns about defensive line recruiting. Jeff's got a reason coming up while maybe we haven't been optimistic enough, but the current situation with the Georgia defensive line, we'll let him tell us in his own words here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before we get to that, though, a couple things to talk about here. First of all, you know, this kind of thing happens all the time, and I just think it's, you know, embarrassing every single time. Andrew Chatfield is a linebacker for Florida. He was recently quoted by 24/7 Sports, asked about the big, and we're calling this, I guess, a week zero game because it's the week before the rest of the season starts. It's like August 24th or something like that. Florida hosting or taking on Miami. Games in Orlando. And, you know, Chatfield, like a lot of these Florida guys over the years, he kind of shoots off his mouth. Let me read you the quote from him about playing Miami. Now, I'm no Miami fan, so I don't care, you know, what he says about the Hurricanes, but this is just more embarrassing talk from Florida. He says, about Miami, well, I don't really see them as a challenge. I just see them as another team, really, because I feel like my whole team, we face SEC teams, big boy teams. They faced one SEC team. They got smashed by LSU last time I checked. But it's whatever, though. It's just another game. So that's Andrew Chatfield, quoted by 24/7 Sports, as saying that he doesn't see Miami as a challenge because they're an SEC team, and LSU, waxed Miami a year ago. Now, my point on all of this, and I know what some people are going to say, especially those of you who are maybe tuning in who are not necessarily Dog Nation Daily regulars or not necessarily UGA fans. Who is Florida to be talking trash like this about anybody? I mean, yes, Miami's not an SEC team, and yes, LSU beat Florida a year ago. But, I mean, how many of these SEC games has Florida won the last few years? Now, you'll say, well, last year, Florida finished ranked in the top 10 and, you know, won the Peach Bowl at the end of the year and kind of on and on and on and on. If that's what they think the definition of arriving is, then I think they've got another thing coming at some point. I just think that there is so much false bravado that comes out of the Florida program. And to me, it is stomach-turning. It is completely inappropriate. It's the most phony, false sense of swagger that you could ever have. It is just not legitimate in any form or fashion. And I like it when Georgia players have confidence. I like it when Georgia players, you know, like some of the stuff that we've heard from DeAndre Baker going to the draft. I like that because it's kind of a quiet confidence. And to me, and maybe I'm just viewing this through red and black colored glasses, I'll admit that, but for me, it seems to be a sense of earned confidence when a guy like Baker says, I believe I'm the best cornerback in the draft. He hasn't given up a touchdown in 2 years. So there's a little bit of a track record to kind of point to. Who is Florida and this Andrew Chatfield guy? Who is he to be saying, you know, we don't sweat Miami right now? I got news for you. None of the programs in the Sunshine State have been all that good the last few years, but this is, I guess, Florida being Florida. Gus Malzahn, ahead of the Auburn spring game on Saturday, still not saying a whole lot about his quarterbacks, including not even how that rotation is playing out. There is no way that Auburn is truly having a four-person quarterback competition. It's just not happening. So Malzahn is either not telling us the truth, which is a possibility. Let's face it, all these coaches kind of spin narratives to their benefit when they want to. And I know that there's the fear of transfer portal opening wide and swallowing in somebody right now. But between, you know, Court Sandberg, who's like 40 years old, the two guys that have been there, Gatewood, Malik Willis, Bo Nix, the freshman, who's, you know, kind of coming in and getting involved in all this, I don't expect Malzahn to name a starter at the end of the spring. He's probably be unwise to do that. I mean, you know, of all the quarterback competitions, this when it at least feels like it is legitimate that he probably is having to try to sort of sit, kind of ruffle through all this and kind of figure out what's what. But by the end of spring, if you're an Auburn fan and if someone hasn't been eliminated, then Malzahn's either using a flawed process to evaluate this or he's just not giving you any kind of information. You can't give four quarterbacks equal reps towards being a starting quarterback and get the most use out of your practice time. So if you're an Auburn fan, and if you are, I don't know why you'd be listening to this right now, but if you're an Auburn fan, you got to eliminate some of these quarterbacks eventually. You don't have to name a starter yet, but you got to get rid of a couple. Let me also mention a couple things here. I saw where Texas A&M has been forced to move its spring game, supposed to be on Saturday, will now be on Friday because of the threat of looming weather. Can you imagine if something like that happened for G-Day? Heaven forbid that takes place, because I imagine Kyle Field with Jimbo Fisher was looking to pack the stands a bit. I'm sure they're very disappointed about having to move, but the threat of weather moves that to Friday. You see that in college baseball all the time, but I'm sure the football fans are not too happy about that. I also saw where Darius Douglas, a South Carolina quarterback, has recently announced his decision to transfer from the program. I have no way of knowing this, but my guess is that may have something to do with Dacreon Joyner. You know, they continue to talk about wanting to have a role for him with this South Carolina offense a bit. If you hear about another quarterback besides Jake Bentley, you know, getting some attention and it's not you, my guess is that's probably a little bit of a turnoff. And so that's my guess about what's going on there at South Carolina, although I have nothing to base that on. We'll make that your SEC through, though. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, let's get ready to do our spring practice report. It's brought to you by Harris Cherokee Casinos. And I want to dive into this a little bit more, something that Kirby Smart said the other day. You know, a lot of talk about what Georgia does have on its defensive line. How's that performing thus far this spring? The other day, though, Kirby Smart went into some more detail about what Georgia currently does not have. Here's what he said about that.
Are you saying an elite three technique, you know, guy that's quick and twitchy? We don't have that right now. No, we're certainly trying to recruit it, but we got some edge guys. And when you count the defensive line, you know, you sometimes count the defensive ends. I thought Nolan played with a high motor today.
So when I first heard this the other day, I said, well, to me, that sounds like Kirby Smart's talking about Brian Brzee, the recruit, the five-star that Georgia's chasing down. That, to me, seems like a reference to Brian Brzee. Now, Jeff Sintel, in yesterday's edition of Before the Hedges, kind of took a little bit different approach on this. He said it may not be a player that Georgia's chasing down the 2020 class. BA, don't forget, and audience, don't forget, there's also some potential quick twitchy three technique type guys, which is a defensive tackle, playing beside the nose guard there. There may be a couple guys coming in on this class that may one day this season fill that role for Georgia. One of them is one of the most impressive prospects Georgia signed in recent years. It's Trayvon Walker. So Jeff says, when you're thinking about quick, twitchy three techniques, athletic defensive tackles, don't forget Walker's coming in this summer. Here's Jeff's intel from Before the Hedges.
He's the first five-star defensive tackle recruit of the Kirby Smart era there at Georgia. Nation's number two class. You can look at him very easily and think about that guy having a clear path to playing right away. When you hear Kirby Smart mention twitchy three techniques and guys that can make a play and can beat a block and get in the backfield, I think he's talking about Trayvon Walker there a lot. And
I think that's a really good point. I mean, from as athletic defensive tackles go, hard to be much more athletic than what Trayvon Walker has a chance to be if he indeed does play, kind of inside for Georgia. But what Jeff also pointed out, and this may be more interesting to me because let's face it, we do talk a lot about Trayvon Walker. He also said, don't forget about some of those other guys at the defensive line position who are coming in this summer. Look at that trio of guys that Georgia brought in from Tennessee. Guys like Bill Norton, who's been committed for a long time. Guys like Zion Logue. Jeff said they got to be factors in this conversation too.
First of all, let's kind of look at two guys that I feel can do either or. They can play out of the edge as a defensive end. That's Zion Logue or Bill Norton. Both those guys are about 6'5", about 285, 290, 6'6", 290. In the case of Zion Logue, great story here. He was a kid that was maybe this time last year, still about 6'5" and about 245 pounds. Folks were wondering, is he a linebacker? Is he a tight end? Well, Zion put on about 45 pounds of weight, didn't lose any of his explosiveness and speed, and now he's a guy that I can see adding some potentially Jordan Davis-type depth to the interior of the Georgia defensive line. Other guy there is Bill Norton. He's a guy that can play defensive end, really nasty temperament. Folks want to sit there and look at him maybe as a Bill Goldberg type, maybe the 2019 model Bill Goldberg. The young man does dream about making suplexes with his tackles, and he's actually done so in his highlight film.
Listen, you had me at hello if you're making the comparison to Bill Goldberg and talking about making suplexes in high school films. We've all seen that from Bill Norton by now, so that kind of gets you excited. I was going to play another piece of audio. I'm actually running a little late here, so I won't do that. But about the other defensive lineman that's coming in this summer, and that's Tymon Mitchell. Mitchell's a guy that, probably not a three technique guy. He's probably more of a nose guard, but if you're talking about Georgia's, and Kirby's called it a thin defensive line right now, Mitchell and Norton and Logue, and maybe especially Trayvon Walker, they do give you a chance to change that perspective, kind of alter that narrative. Georgia may be a little deeper on its defensive line come summer than it looks right now, because you've still got some help on the way, as they say, when it comes to those defensive linemen arriving later on this summer. That's our spring practice update brought to you by our friends at Harris Cherokee Casinos. When it's time to get your other game on, Harris Cherokee Casinos gives you two great options. Harris Cherokee Valley River Casino and Hotel in Murphy, North Carolina. It's convenient to Atlanta. It offers over 300 hotel rooms, slots, blackjack, roulette, and plenty of fun. And don't forget about Harris Cherokee Resort in Cherokee, North Carolina, with over 1,000 rooms, less than 3 hours from Atlanta. Everything you'd expect from a world-class resort. They got a World Series of Poker event taking place. I believe it starts this weekend there. Also, spa, golf, concerts, plenty of dining options. It is a world-class resort if there ever was one. So no matter where you play, Harris Cherokee Casinos has you covered. Find them online at Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. That's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. All right, we will get ready to wrap up on our program here today. We'll do so in style. I a moment ago talked about those lousy, stinking Gators. I don't like them, and I think sometimes their trash talk and their false bravado is a little too much for me. I find it distasteful, and as much as rivalries maybe change around college football, as I said before, non-traditional rivals like Georgia and Oklahoma or Georgia and Florida State, all of a sudden, maybe Georgia and Texas, all of a sudden those series have a little more cachet than some of the stuff we've dealt with for years and years and years. Have no fear. From my point of view, nothing is going to change for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. That is still a game that means plenty for Georgia. That is still an opponent you want to vanquish every single year. And over the last couple of years, Georgia has done that. Well, they've done it in style. 894 days. That's how long it's been since Florida has beaten Georgia. It's good news here on this Thursday. It's our Gator Hater Updater. Y'all have a good day. We'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily. And